Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Euchre, we are back.
The Euchre, and we're not talking about the Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, don't type in Euchre in the Urban Dictionary search, or Google for that matter, because you will get some unsavory results. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
And this is indeed West Coast Bias. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment. iTunes, Podomatic, I don't know, Facebook, whatever you want to do, whatever you want. You know where we're at. We know where you're at, too, by the way. We're all watching it. We're keeping tabs.
Just like Big Brother.
Right. Yeah. Or Bob Costas. Everybody's Big Brother. Or everybody's little brother.
Or the Russian hackers. Or the NSA. Who knows?
I don't know why, but Costas is, as we speak, probably, or probably just over, just got Ford C. Frick Award for broadcasting excellence.
Yes, congratulations to Bob Costas.
Yeah, it's probably a long time coming. He devoted like a good amount of his speech to Bob Euchre, just ripping Bob Euchre a new one, talking about his career as a player. He hit like 200 with, I don't know, 14 home runs over 8 years or something, I don't know. But in one season he had the record for passed balls with, I think, 26 passed balls in one season. But he only played 77 games, I guess. Anyway, I typed in Euchre just for some weird reason. I don't know why. And I got a really strange result in the Urban Dictionary. I don't know.
He missed the tag. It was not the definition that came up, I'm guessing.
He missed the tag. Yeah. Really weird. I don't know why it is, but we're going to start this off on a blue note, I guess, here.
Are we not going to keep this one a family show then?
Should we save it for you? Do you want to look this up? The audience, the fans at home? You know what? We'll let you look it up, okay? Just go to the Urban Dictionary. It's really strange. Really
strange. Very, very strange.
Anyway, a lot of strange things have been happening, though, in baseball, and that's as is this season is wont to do. A lot of weird things are happening. Plus, we have an insane amount of trades. Guys going from American League to National League.
Yes, and of the date of this recording on July 29th, we are still 2 full days away from the trading deadline. So I imagine by the end of this podcast or shortly thereafter, we will have even more changes.
Yeah, we'll be. I mean, it might even happen during this show. And I'm sure by the time you're listening to this, who knows? Chris Archer might be on the Phillies. I don't even know. I don't know what's going on. I think there's like dozens of teams looking for him right now, or looking at him right now. Obviously, I think the biggest one. Well, okay, Zach Britton. Let's just start there. I don't think that's the biggest one, but that's a huge one right there.
It is. That was an interdivision trade as well.
Rarely ever see that happening. In fact, I think it was the first time that the division rivals had made an in-season trade involving players since July of 89 when the Yankees got John Habian for Stan Jefferson.
Now,
it's crazy, though.
Now, granted, one of these rivals has less wins than the other has losses.
Right.
But
right, it's still, you know, it's still not unprecedented, but very rare. Zach Britton, he's 30 now. His ERA 3.45, 16 appearances this year. After, of course, he had a delayed start due to surgery to his ruptured Achilles, which, you know, you don't really fully recover from that. Luckily, he's not a runner, but still, you know, legs, the bottom half is
It's important for a pitcher.
Very important.
I remember that was one of the things that Roger Clemens always stressed was the health of his legs and the power.
That guy's legs, Jesus Christ, he was like a Clydesdale.
Kurt Schilling preached it too. That the bottom half of the body, the legs, the glutes, that's where the power came from.
Bloody sock and all. From 2015 to 2017, Zach Britton posted a 1.59 ERA with 98 saves. Easily establishing himself as one of the most dominant relievers in that span. But he hasn't really fully returned to form. And he may be past his prime, or he's certainly lesser than his prime. But, you know, in his last 8 outings, he's allowed no runs and held opponents to a 125 average. So he's still there. It's still a huge boon to the Yankees. I mean, it's just insane. They already had the best bullpen, not just in the American League, but in baseball. I mean, and this also is a huge bonus for the Yankees because it keeps their rivals, the Red Sox, off the table, who desperately need bullpen relief. I mean, it's almost like I'm sure they're going to use Britton, but even if they almost could just shelve him and just keep him away, essentially, from the Red Sox. You're like, well, we don't need him, but we don't want you to have him, kind of thing, you know?
Right, so saying that it doesn't necessarily make the difference for the Yankees
because again, they already have the best bullpen in baseball. Now they're just that much better.
Unbelievably, as good as the Yankees are this year, at 66-37, they're 5.5 games behind the Red Sox.
Yeah, I still think the Red Sox, it's theirs to lose. The package, the Yankees had to get rid of Dylan Tate. He's their ninth ranked prospect, according to MLB Pipeline. He had posted a 3.38 in Class A ERA, and their 15th ranked, Cody Carroll. I don't know. They looks like they're happy that the Yankees have to pay the remainder of Britton's salaries, like $4.5 million. But I mean, man, their bullpen is just stacked, you know? Right. So it's like they can give Green or Betances or even Chapman a day off if they need to. And Chapman, you know, he has some shaky starts every once in a while, but he's still their guy for sure. But, you know, I mean, it's just so bolstered now. It's going to be tough. They're trying. Of course, they also got J.A. Happ, right? Was it a hapless trade? Sorry for the horrible pun. It seemed like they maybe paid a little too much.
You're not sorry for that
pun. I'm not sorry.
I don't know if they paid too much. It's been interesting watching because
they may have. It has been. The word was that the Yankees GM Brian Cashman found himself in a bit of a stare down with the Blue Jays, his Blue Jays counterpart Ross Atkins. Apparently, Cashman made it seem as if he didn't really need another pitcher, you know, talking up his younger prospects and obviously his amazing bullpen. You know, I guess he's trying to play hard to get kind of thing. But he's also trying to dwell on the fact that Happ hasn't really been that good this year, and he hasn't. But Atkins didn't budge. He's not going to get negged. He's not going to fall into that trap. And so it was Cashman who blinked first. So they traded away Brandon Drury and the top outfield prospect, Billy McKinney, who, you know, most people thought was a little too much, but a lot of people thought Drury would have been enough, and maybe he would have been, but
happens. Now, looking at this trade now a few days out, this happened before the injury.
Injury? Oh.
Judge.
Yeah, is out.
He is out for the next at least 3 weeks with...
Chip fracture in his right wrist.
Right, which is huge. Now, do the Yankees still make this move, trading around that prospect after the injury?
It's a done deal. What do you mean?
I know, but it happened before the injury.
Oh, I see. No, well...
So if the injury would have happened before, do they still make this deal?
Yeah, they do. Okay. Because those guys weren't starting. And the Yankees already have three true outfielders. They have Hicks, Gardner, and Stanton. So the only thing is now they're going to maybe need somebody to DH because the catcher
Sanchez
is still injured, right?
Yeah.
And so they'll probably just have Neil Walker, who hasn't really been seeing a lot of playing time. He'll probably be getting a lot of the DH starts. So that might be good for fantasy also for the next at least 3 weeks, as long as Judge is out. Maybe take a second look at Neil Walker if he's still available. That might be a good addition right now. Freddie Freeman had a similar injury, if you remember last year, and he missed 44 games with that chip fracture in his wrist. So, you know, Judge has got bigger bones too, so, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad.
And pretty young as well, might heal a little bit quicker.
That's true. Yeah, he is very young. So they approximate about 3 weeks. They said they don't need surgery. But no, I don't think that they would have not traded for Hap. I think they still would have, you know, because they need him. They don't really have a great starting pitcher except for Severino. Sabathia can probably get it together in the postseason if he's healthy. I mean, that's still a long ways away for him. Obviously, Sonny Gray isn't.
Nah, he's not.
Good. He's good, but he's not.
He's good. He's not like he was when he was with the A's.
Right. Definitely not. Definitely not. And so, you know, so they have some problems, and they're just trying to get him. They're just trying to help themselves. But you see, this all is going to just go down to one game, right? Which is what we talked about last week. It's probably, if they don't win the division, it looks like the Red Sox, after last night, are back to 40 games over 500.
Unbelievable.
Yankees could catch them, possibly, but probably won't, especially if the Red Sox do add another pitcher before the end of this. So
what's crazy, one of the strange things that I was able to find this week was that if, as of Friday, I guess it was, if the Red Sox finish the rest of the season playing 500 baseball, they will still have 100 wins and 62 losses.
So all they have to do is play 500
all
ball.
They have to do is play 500 season. Baseball to get a 100-win season.
Jesus Christ. So, yeah, they'll probably win the division.
it would seem so. And, yeah, it'll come down to a one-game playoff between the Yankees and looking like either Seattle or Oakland at this point.
So that goes into the question then, is all of this worth it? So maybe you're right. Maybe it wasn't worth trading the top outfield prospect and Brandon Drury for a guy that might not even pitch that one-game playoff against the A's or the Mariners, it's looking like right now.
Unless you use that pitcher, unless they start Hap in that one game.
They will not start Hap. They will start Severino, 100%.
So then you have a number two to start the next round should they win that game.
Right. That's true. But again, that's a big contingent. You know, that's a big,
it is. It's a big if. It's a fickle game and anything can happen. Man. And they're still the Yankees. And they still got the pinstripe factor going on. And, you know, that's what every team wants to meet. And we're West Coast bias here, and we've been talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox a little bit too long already this episode.
We have. So, I just want to reiterate how strong that bullpen is.
Yes.
Because
no, there's no denying.
Ridiculous.
There's
it's
no
ridiculous.
Denying.
It's
there's
insane.
No denying that these are two great teams and all the way around their roster. They have a weak points. They have their strength. But yes, they are two great teams.
But you're right. We're done with that. The a slight transition from American League East to now National League West.
We got
Big Manny. And it seemed like
Manny
it happened
Machado.
The day after our last episode. It actually did happen.
It did. And I believe we were talking about it and you didn't think that it was going to happen at the time.
I didn't know. Because I didn't think that the Dodgers were that deep. I'm always amazed how deep their system is. Truly the deepest in all of the game. I mean, it's just insane.
It would seem so.
That they were still able to not give up Alex Verdugo for a star, the preeminent player of the season, of the at least of the trade season.
Having such a good season on such a lackluster team this year. It's been really amazing to watch.
Huge.
And it's unfortunate to see someone wearing orange and black, of course, go start wearing Dodger blue. But, you know.
You have Jeff Kent nightmares right now?
Somewhat. not quite as intense, but...
right, because you don't have a personal stake in Machado. It's great. It's
he
great
is
news.
On my fantasy team, but...
Oh, you do have Machado.
I do have Machado.
Oh, so you're even happier then. Now,
well, now we have... We'll have
now you got to root for Dodger Blue, baby.
In
that's
theory.
Right. Oh,
no,
yeah.
I can still root for the Dodgers to lose, but him to do well.
That's true. Unless it's the bottom of the ninth, then it's a tight game.
Wow. And as long as it's not against the Giants, it's fine.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
No, I mean, I'm excited because now I will have an opportunity to actually see Machado play in person.
That's true. That's true. As will I. Yeah, that's great. The Dodgers are coming to Oakland in August, which will be great. The last time they did that was 2013. I was there. It's a great game. Dodgers won. So Dodgers and A's have played since, but not in Oakland. So it's been 5 years. So I'm going to try to go to that game. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, only two previous players in history played the All-Star game with one team and then joined another when the season resumed. So Frankie Hayes was the first in 1946. But there is one that happened just 2 years ago, 2016. Do you remember that? Can you name that pitcher?
You name that pitcher?
That was
would
a hint right there. He's
not,
a pitcher.
Not no one other than the Shark, Jeff Samardzija.
Ooh, no sir.
No?
Nope.
He was out there with the blank hat and the National League jersey, or the American League jersey.
Right, but he had already joined it that when the game was going on, remember? So he was wearing the National League.
So it didn't technically happen after the
right.
All-Star game.
Right.
It happened just before.
Exactly.
Okay.
So Drew Pomeranz.
Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah,
and
2016.
When? 2016.
Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Machado's going to hopefully remain at shortstop. I only say hopefully because if he's not, that would mean that Justin Turner is out, which is what's happening currently right now. So Machado is actually playing third, which is actually better for the team because he's one of the best defensive third basemen in all of baseball.
And he's been struggling a little bit at shortstop.
At shortstop, he's not elite. He's a good shortstop, but he's not like, you know, Nolan Arenado third baseman or himself for that matter as a third baseman. But, you know, the Dodgers... again, are extremely deep. We were able to send Verdugo down, even though he's killing it right now, just to get Puig back, who got a home run last night. But it's just nice to have that. It's nice to have that flexibility now with JT out. Let Machado play third. All is well in the world, except for Max Muncy, who only has one hit since the All-Star break, which is going into that home run derby curse that we were kind of talking about, right?
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Let me just... Yeah, it looks like Sean Newcomb has a no-hitter going through the Dodgers right now. So, all right, Sean, you got a no-hitter going, all right? Don't fuck it up. I'm trying to jinx it, by the way. That won't happen. We'll give you some live updates on that, although I'm sure you'll be listening to this hours from now, if not days from now. But anyway, Dodgers? I forget what we were talking about. Oh, yeah, Max Muncy only has one hit. So is this curse – that's not even a curse, but is this sort of the Aaron Judge factor? This is why Aaron Judge did not – playing the home run derby this year, right? Or Stanton, for that matter, either.
Right, and why stars in the past have bowed out of that home run hitting contest, home run derby, and something about swinging for the fences every single pitch takes the hitter out of their routine and their normal swing.
It has to. It definitely does.
It would seem to me, watching, you know, batting practice before games, these guys put on great swings and hit the ball out without really even thinking about it. The fact that it's a contest and they're competing and actually trying to hit a home run make that much of a difference? It would seem so. But...
I think so, but I think it's what you were saying first. It's more that they literally have to change their swing because they're getting a 40-mile-an-hour ball at them, and so they're just trying to whack it. They're just trying to smack it out, which they would never do. So some guys can, like Cespedes, right, or Griffey. Like, I think about probably the two best ever at the Home Run Derby, right? Those guys could have fun. Those guys could go in there and just have fun and just hit the balls out, and then when game starts again, they're back into... They know how to turn it off and on. At least that's what it seems like.
That's what it would seem like.
The best guys can do that.
Such a mental aspect to
this
game,
right,
where everything is in that swing, and you have to practice that swing. It's the same thing with a golf swing.
Right.
You pull out of your swing for whatever reason, trying to push that ball farther, you're going to screw it up for your normal game.
Yeah.
And these guys have such perfect swings and can hit the ball out with their normal swing. Why don't they go up there, look for a good pitch from whoever's feeding them batting practice pitches, and put their normal swing on it to hit it out?
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that it's not about outs anymore. It's about the clock. They're racing the clock. And so maybe they're doing weird things to their swing that they don't, normally wouldn't have, because like you said, you wait for the pitch, but you can't do that anymore with the new rules.
This phenomena is not unique to now with the clock aspect of the home run derby.
They've had the clock for a few years now, and
but
it seems like more
Barry Bonds,
in the
Barry
last
Bonds
5 years
was talking about this very thing 10 years ago
about how it messed up his swing.
That it changed his swing too much. It was hard for it to get back to that normal
swing.
So
Bonds didn't do it
in 1997 or 2007 when the All-Star game was here in San Francisco, yeah. AT&T Park. The logo of that All-Star game was a splash hit.
Right.
There were no splash hits hitting in the entire game.
Are you serious?
Or at
the home run derby
contest. No one hit it over
what?
That right field wall.
Really?
Bonds did not participate in that pussy. Home run hitting contest. What and he's jerk. The one who's hit the most into the water.
Boo.
Exactly.
I've seen Jock Peterson hit two in batting practice over, you know. I mean, even batting practice.
Yes.
Yeah. How did nobody get one over that year? That's crazy. That doesn't even make sense.
Lefties or not lefties with not the right type of power.
That's so weird. That's really
and
strange.
And in general, at AT&T Park, the ball does travel better out to right or to left field than it does to right field.
Sure. I don't know. That's really weird. So Bonds didn't play in that, or he? But see, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. So guys that are established like that, I wouldn't worry about. But guys like Max Muncy, who weren't, you know, this powerhouse home run hitter in the minors. I mean, he hit home runs and he was a great hitter, but he was not like nobody expected he'd be hitting 23 home runs by the All-Star break. It's just insane, especially coming in late to the season. And he sort of had just a natural free easy swing,
right?
That he could adjust mid at bat, and then he goes to the home run derby, and now it's totally different. Now they're expecting him to be Frank Thomas, and I don't think that he is that guy. I don't think he is that Giancarlo Stanton kind of guy, you know. And I think that probably is what happened to Aaron Judge. I think Aaron Judge has a really nice swing, and he's just a big SOB, so those balls tend to fly. Right. But I don't think he thinks of himself even as like a power, you know, big hurt. I don't know why I'm thinking of Frank Thomas so much, but it just seems like he was one of those guys that would just mash it, or like Mark McGwire.
Yeah.
Right. Or Griffey, for that matter, you know?
Well, Griffey was one of those guys that had that sweet
pretty,
swing.
Pretty.
Beautiful swing, and balls just leapt off his back. I mean, he's 600 home run club, right?
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
Dude could hit.
Right. And so basically we saw that huge drop in performance from Judge in the second half of last season.
And
I just hope that's not what's happening to Muncy right now.
And less so from Stanton.
Yeah.
There was a couple of weeks where he didn't hit a home run, and he missed hitting 60 last year by one.
Right. I think Stanton is fine. I think he should be in it. I think if you lead all of baseball in home runs, you should be forced to be in the home run derby the next year. That's pretty messed up. But, you know, come on. I mean,
barring injury, but yeah, that's what the fans want to see is home runs.
Right.
But
otherwise, don't have it.
I think the clock is a big factor in rushing these guys.
I don't know. That's
swings.
The only thing I could think of. Yeah, I'm thinking that the whole clock thing is weird. Because, like you were saying before, like you could wait for your pitch, and you get 10 outs, any ball in play that's not a home run is an out. You get 10. Okay, great. And I think it'd be easier on the guys, too, you know?
Yeah, and they could stay in their swing and not have as big a dip.
Right, because there's that added pressure. You're still competing. It's not really a day off for you because you're doing interviews, you're blah, blah, blah. All right, anyway, I'm over that. Hopefully Muncy's fine. Be all right. We need to break up this no-hitter right now. Anyway, what is up with position players towing the rubber? Now, as of today, I don't think one happened last night. There have been 20 position players just in the month of July to pitch in a game. This is the first time that's happened in any month in modern history. We're not even at the end of July. And there have been 42 position players who have taken the mound. The old record for an entire season was 32.
Wow.
21 teams have already thrown at least one pitcher out there. I mean, that's well over half.
What is with it? I don't know. Maybe it's all the talk about bringing the DH to the National League.
What? Trying to
prove that pitchers can't hit and hitters can't pitch.
I hope so. Maybe.
You know, that these are
specialized
abilities, and there's no such thing as a complete ball player who can both pitch it and hit it.
Tell that to Max Scherzer. He'd punch you in the eye.
I'm not going to tell it to his face. Or Mad Bum for that thing. But,
right. Yeah, or Mad
Bum.
Or Kershaw, who won his on base four times yesterday. Yeah.
So it's with one hit and three walks.
Hey. First time, though.
It's
60 years or something like that. Yeah.
It's great. And there are guys, obviously, but you wouldn't confuse Clayton Kershaw as with someone like, his teammate Puig.
I've seen Kershaw get pinch hitted. I've seen him pinch hit, I should say. Sure. I've seen Bumgarner pinch hit a few times.
It happens. But these guys are primarily pitchers. They can hit. They're not afraid to step in the box and take their hacks.
Right. No, and I think it goes further than that. I think they take pride in it. I don't think it's even that they're afraid. I think they do think of
because it is part of the game. It is part of their job. They are in the starting lineup. Yeah. They're expected to.
Yeah, they play once every 5 days.
Stand in there.
They play 32 games a year. These other guys are playing 160 games a year. Sometimes 162. You know, I mean. So I think as a pitcher, they have that added responsibility. Like, man, I'm here. You know, I play once a week. I should at least be able to handle myself with the bat. At least. The best pitchers do. The best players think that. And so, but I don't know. I don't know what they're teaching kids now as they're growing up. I don't know what colleges are doing. I don't know if they all have DHs now. Like, that's kind of scary.
I believe that really the one of the only leagues that doesn't have a DH is the National League.
In Major League Baseball. I know. It's crazy. So the Cubs have used 5 different position players to pitch this season. 5. Hap, Rizzo, Caratini, LaStella, Jimenez. Not only are they the first team in modern history that can say that, no other team has pitched 4 true position players. And again, the season's just over half over. It's crazy. Last Friday, Madden, and we talked about Madden. This was actually the trivia question last week, or 2 weeks ago. But he pitched 3 position players in one game. Only one other team in history has pitched 3 true position players in the last century, and that was that George Bamberger's 1979 Brewers with Sal Bando, a game we've talked about many times. It seems to be talked about a lot in this, I think, just because of the prevalence of position players pitching. I don't know. The Cubs hadn't pitched 2 position players in the same game since May of 1887, and they hadn't used 3 in a game since 1884, which means they went an entire century, the entire 20th century, without doing this. 131 years, to be exact. Pretty crazy. Kike. How about Kike? You see that little...
bringing new meaning to double pump windup.
It was a triple pump.
I'll put the video up on Facebook for those of you who haven't seen it. It is... quite entertaining.
It was very entertaining, but then he
gave it up in a big way. What is his ERA now? 81?
Maybe something like that. Would this be the ignoble award of the week? Kike became the first position player in history to give up a walk-off homer Tuesday when he served up a 16th inning bomb to Trevor Plouffe. He's actually the second true position player to wind up as a losing pitcher this month. Let us not forget Jeff Mathis with Arizona.
Mm.
But you could probably guess that in no other month in the last 100 years has this happened, of course, because this season is just been like that.
So very, very strange.
Pretty weird.
I guess we do have one last major trade to talk about in the National League, involving the National League Central.
The National League. Yeah. Moustakas.
Moustakas, the Moose.
Huge.
Going from the Royals, being reunited with his former teammate, Lorenzo Cain, in Milwaukee.
Well, there's another bigger one, big one, too, but you're right. I think that is the best one. That is going to have the most impact.
It is. Team. I mean, we're looking at Milwaukee a half a game behind the Cubs and looking pretty strong.
Looking just as tough as the Cubs. Looking a lot better at the plate than the Cubs, certainly. Yeah, they got Moustakas from the Royals for Brett Phillips and right-handed pitcher Jorge Lopez. It's a great deal. He'll take over as the everyday third baseman. See, this is the only issue, and it's a slight issue, but it might be an issue. We'll see, because Moustakas is the third baseman, but Travis Shaw was the third baseman with the Brewers, and so they're gonna shift Travis Shaw over to second base, but Travis Shaw has exactly zero starts at second base in his professional career. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. It certainly does lengthen an already extremely deep and powerful Brewers lineup. And he's going to be reunited with Lorenzo Cain, which is pretty cool, you know, his old teammate. So that'll be interesting. Moustakas has also showed some willingness to play second base if need be, if Travis Shaw is just garbage. So we'll see. Either way, he's going to be starting every day. Great news for fantasy owners, myself in particular. Hopefully that helps. But there's another central trade, right? Of course, Hamels.
Cole Hamels.
Cubs got him. Cubs got him. Now, if this was 6 years ago, that would have been huge.
Yes.
Alas, it is 2018, and well, he has an 11.12 ERA in July.
Well, thanks. Obviously, after starting five different position players as a pitcher, they might need some help with their pitching, and Cole Hamels has been solid in the past.
Oh, sure, and he has great postseason experience, and he's been pitching in the American League a lot, so, you know, we'll see how it goes back with him in the National League. His home road splits are pretty bad, but that might be a good thing now that he's in a new park. He's got a 6.41 ERA in 10 home starts this year, but a 2.93 in 10 on the road, so maybe he's better on the road. And he likes Wrigley. Of course, he had a no-hitter, what, 3 years ago at Wrigley? Cole Hamels did. So, you know, for him, I'm sure there's some fond memories there. And
sure.
Clearly, he does not uniform. Like pitching in Texas. Wow. Maybe he likes it in the Windy City. I don't know. We'll see. And, they're spending very little on the deal. Texas taking the bulk of his contract and the buyout for next year's deal. But the way it was financed means the Cubs won't be taking on money that affects their competitive balance tax bottom line, which that's mainly for the front office guys, but I'm sure they're stoked. They're still responsible for $5 million of his remaining salary between the rest of the season and the 2019 option. They gave up Class A pitcher Raleigh Lacy and Eddie Butler. I guess I don't even really know much about him except for people call him the poor man's Jake Arrieta. But right now, Jake Arrieta is the poor man's Jake Arrieta already, so I don't really know what that means. But so either way, it looks like a good deal for the Cubs.
It does. It does.
I mean, again, it's not 2009 Cole Hamels, but hey, I think, you know, little bit of scenery is fine. It's good. It's a good thing. Whatever. What are you going to do? It'll make the Central a lot more interesting.
That'll be a good race coming down in the next couple months between Milwaukee and the Cubs.
I'd like to see Milwaukee in there. It'd be pretty good. I'd like to see Uecker doing some postseason.
Oh, yeah. Be fun listening to the Uke. doing his thing, yeah. Calling games in the postseason. Why not?
So the Orioles were 45 games under 500. When they faced the Red Sox on Tuesday. The Red Sox, on the other hand, were 40 games over 500. Then what happened? Orioles beat the Red Sox. So what was the last team? What was the last team? A 40-plus game team under a team. When was the last time a team with 40-plus games under 500 won a game against a team with 40-plus games over 500 before the start of August? Of course, that has never happened in history.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had no idea, so I'm glad it hasn't happened.
Just a lot of weird things. A lot of weird things have been happening. Looks like Andrew Miller is almost back. He was on the 60-day DL. He's got knee issues. He pitched in Class A. Got kind of roughed up, though. So, I don't know. We'll see. He was charged with 4 runs on 3 hits. Mm. 1 strikeout. No walks. 19 pitches. Sucks for fantasy owners on that sense. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Indians could really use him because apparently Cody Allen is no longer the closer. Have you seen this? Terry Francona announced Friday night that the recently acquired Brad Hand will be the closer from here on out. Yeah, Cody Allen's getting bumped. Allen hasn't been that great, but...
Or maybe he'd be more effective as a setup man.
Perhaps, but then what happens when Miller gets back? Well, Miller is super flexible. They can pitch him anywhere until he gets back to his form.
Yeah. Let him heal completely, be effective, come in and use him where they need him. As that say position, maybe a starter.
I was a little surprised, though.
Andrew Miller.
The opener. You know, the Rays pitching, though, is still making history, sort of.
Well, yeah, we saw Sergio Romo playing third base for an hour.
Well, okay, so that's the thing. On Wednesday night, Johnny Venters was the 6th and last Rays pitcher to enter the game against the Yankees. But he was not the guy who got the save. Oh, wait, what? Right. What happened? Of course, Sergio Romo. So the Rays let Romo take a one-batter gamble at third base.
Yeah.
While Venters pitched to the lefty, Greg Bird, then Romo, you know, meandered back to the mound, collected the final 2 outs, and got the save. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, this happened 4 other times since 1975. We have Cordy Guerin, 2016, with the Giants. He moved to left field. 91, Roger McDowell moved to left field. 89, Chuck Krim, first base. 87, Todd Worrell. Again, same thing, moved to right field. But none of these guys have ever played third base. So Romo is the first player since the beginning of the modern save rule to play third and get a save in the same game. Pretty insane. It's pretty crazy. I'm desperate right now for
was it the last
pitching.
2 outs?
I'm considering picking up Romo.
I had thought that he got the first out, moved to third for the second out, and then came back to the mound for the last.
No, he maybe he came in the 8th. I don't remember. All I know is that he was the 5th pitcher in. Venters was the 6th. Yeah, Venters got Greg Bird. Yeah, so then he must have came in the 8th. Really strange. Pretty crazy. But yeah, the only player in history to do that. It's pretty, well, at least since they've been counting saves.
Right.
They're doing it. You know, Romo's stats, his numbers aren't that bad this year.
No, and the Rays are now essentially a 500 team. They're not behind the teams we were talking about earlier, the Red Sox and the Yankees. They're nowhere near being able to get into the postseason, being 19 and a half games back, but they are better than expected at 53 and 52.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They're definitely making a name for themselves. They're trying new things. You know, you can't blame them for that. I don't know. Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? How about Grandal making history? On Tuesday, he hit home runs from each side of the plate, which I'm pretty sure he did on opening day last year, which is pretty cool. The bad news, though, for Grandal is that he also struck out 4 times thanks to a 16-inning game. How many other switch hitters have homered from both sides and struck out 4 times in a game?
I imagine not too many of them.
That would be 0. That would be 0. First time that's ever happened in history. And Ross Stripling, which, God, all these are just sort of slightly ignoble, I guess, to... not really the best records to have, but
dubious achievements.
Yeah, the dubious achievement of the week. Ross Stripling faced 384 batters in the first half and never once gave up back-to-back home runs. And then The All-Star break came, and he served up back-to-back taters to Bregman and George Springer, of course, in the 10th, which was an incredible game. But hold on, and wait, there's more. What did Stripling do in his first start after the break? Yeah, that's right. Reese Hoskins and Odubel Herrera, back-to-back home runs. No other pitcher in the history of the game allowed back-to-back homers in an All-Star game and their first appearance after the All-Star game, which is insane because he didn't allow back-to-back homers all year. But, you know, again, this year, very strange year. And, yeah, not the best record to have, but, hey, what are you going to do?
I guess it's the law of averages, although back-to-back home runs aren't generally so common, but... Yeah.
No. So is that an All-Star game hangover? Is that such a thing? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you're young. But it's weird because Stripling is very level-headed. He's a very smart guy. He doesn't really, you know, seem to let emotions or anything get to him. But you've had some crazy or obscure stats.
Yes, some very obscure stats I've found this week. The first, not so obscure, but certainly a notable shout-out to San Francisco manager Bruce Bochy.
Ooh, the Boch.
Earning his a win on Wednesday that tied him 11th all-time on the managerial win list, with tying with Casey Stengel.
Really? Stengel? Stengelese?
Yes.
Nice.
And the remaining 10 managers in front are all in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. You believe Leo Durocher would be next in line, so he's in number 10. But yeah, they're 10 through 1. They're all in the Hall of Fame, so that's a pretty good sign if you're on that list.
Way to go, Boch.
Chances are you will be, because Mike Socha is in the top 20, and I think he's the only other guy that's... Well, Dusty Baker's in the top 20 also, but he's not really currently managing.
No, he's not.
Jim Leland as well.
And very few of them actually have 4 World Series appearances and 3 wins.
Right. Let's see who else you got just behind them, or just in front, I guess. Yeah, so it's... well, Casey Stengel and Bruce Bochy both have 1,905 wins, right?
Right.
Stengel has a slightly better winning percentage, you know. But, man, that's pretty damn good considering Stengel was... on one of the best Yankees runs in baseball history there. So he's got a little work to do. He's got over about 103 more games to win before he can pass Leo Durocher. So we'll see. We'll see. Dodgers versus Yankees all the time, no matter what. Dodgers versus Giants, sorry.
So I found a very interesting anniversary of note. On July 27th, this odd thing happened. Back in 1995, there was a Yankees-Royals game that was started by Andy Pettit for the Yankees and Mark Gubitsa. I'm probably butchering that name, and I apologize to him. Yeah. But it was a 1-0 win for Andy Pettit over the Kansas City Royals. On that very same day, July 27th, 95, 2 people were born. I'm sure there were more than just 2 people, but 2 people in particular.
Yeah.
Aldebenzo Mondesi and Brad Keller were both born on July 27th, 1995, on the same day as this Yankees-Royals game.
Okay.
23 years later, 2018, July 27th, those 2 players started against each other in a Yankees-Royals matchup.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's so very random. And so just very odd that, you know, that both players were born on this date and started against each other on the on their birthday and on the anniversary of a Yankees Royals game.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
But it is.
But you had a crazier one that I didn't even believe, honestly.
Yeah, we had to look it up.
I had to look it up.
We did because it just seemed like that's outrageously impossible. But yes, the great Phil Niekro, knuckleballer extraordinaire.
Right.
Phil Niekro won more games after turning 35 than David Cone had in his entire career.
In his entire career?
In his
David
entire
Cone,
career.
Mr. Perfect?
Mr. Perfect, David what? Cone.
See, that's just insane. That makes no sense to me. So I had to do what I normally do when I'm bored, lazy, inspired, drunk, sober. Pretty much any time of the day is good to go on baseballreference.com. And sure enough, yeah, Phil Niekro. And I guess probably because he pitched till he was 48 years
yes,
old.
This is a
but
likely.
But still, pretty amazing numbers. David Cone's career wins. He was 194. 194 and 126.
Which is not a bad career record at all.
Very nice. Very respectable. ERA under 3.5. Very nice.
On some great Yankees teams.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And again, he had a perfect game, which is pretty incredible. Yeah, five-time World Series. Yeah, five-time All-Star Cy Young Award. But Phil Niekro, 318
wins. 318
wins. Yes, sir. 3.35 ERA. Pretty damn good. Over 3,300 strikeouts. Really hard to beat. He was a five-time All-Star as well. Five-time Gold Glove, and he is in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, he pitched until he was 48 years old. Pretty remarkable. And, I mean, look, even in his, let's say, 47th year, he still had 11 wins, you know?
His age 47th.
Age, yeah. Yes. And he had 14, you know, the next year. So, but like you said, knuckleball, you can go a lot longer if you're doing that.
Yeah,
you know?
You're not throwing out your arm as hard as you can
right.
every single pitch.
But yeah, that was pretty. It's a pretty crazy record right there after you're 35 years old. But yeah, it just goes to show you can always reinvent yourself. Like I'm hoping the Dodgers are gonna do and get a hit off this damn Arizona team or Atlanta team. And speaking of damned Atlanta teams, what is up with the goddamn Atlanta announcers? They need to relax, okay? Or maybe I need to relax. But, yeah, I mean, come on. Why they're just throwing shade all over the Dodgers yesterday. Getting talking trash, of course, behind their back. No, none of the Dodgers could hear.
Right. Who's going to be listening to the Atlanta Braves broadcast anyway?
Well, exactly. I guess you're right. So this is what I had to endure last night listening to the damn Braves announcers here.
It's... I grew up in the Dodger organization and certainly was taught how to play professional baseball and do things the right way. I want you to look at some things that were going on today in batting practice here with the Dodgers. What do you see? T-shirts? You see Chase Utley with no socks and pants up over his knees, T-shirt. This was prevalent with their whole team. And I think about fans that come to SunTrust Park who are Dodgers fans and want to see their players. They had no idea who any of them were. Nobody had any kind of uniform or batting practice shirt on with their name on their jersey. They looked very unprofessional. And I think I can say this because I know what the Dodger organization was all about.
There's the bunt. It is perfect.
But if I were a Dodger fan, I'd be embarrassed. And I don't know how Major League Baseball
okay,
all right.
You need to,
such
I'd be embarrassed.
When the gates are
nobody know who any of them were. I think we all know who everybody is, all right? Dude, just chill out. It's BP. Maybe don't play baseball in a goddamn sweltering 99-degree, 90% humidity, and maybe guys wouldn't have to wear their short sleeves. What is it, the 30s? He's out there in his short sleeves. Like, yes, it's hot as hell. It's BP. Chill out. All right, maybe.
Now, the first thing
ridiculous.
That comes to my mind there is Allen Iverson of Philadelphia 76ers.
Practice.
We're talking about practice.
But seriously, though, I mean, when's the last time you went to a BP and saw guys fully suited up? I can't even remember the last time, and I always go to the game early. I love watching BP.
And generally you're not going to know who they are unless you can really see them anyway.
Well, again, this guy's, you know, saying like, oh, Dodger fans don't even know who's up. I know who's up just based on how they're standing, based on how they're swinging. I could be out in the bleachers and tell you who's at bat. I mean, real fans don't need dudes with their names printed on their backs, right? Like, just, well, yeah.
That's why the
you
Yankees,
know that, yeah.
That's why, why the Yankees don't wear their names
ever.
On either,
yeah.
Home or away.
Yeah,
the Giants don't have them on the back of their home jerseys.
So stupid.
If you're a fan, should know the numbers.
Yeah,
of the players.
Exactly.
And if the numbers aren't there, you should know more about the players to be able to tell who they are from a distance. Say, hey, that looks like Yasiel Puig taking batting practice. Let's go watch.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's not too
if
many people
who, Puig
who
is,
look
yeah.
like Puig.
You don't know who Chase Utley is. Yeah. And by the way, Chase Utley was wearing socks. Watch the video. He's got little crew socks. All right. He rolled his pants out. He's still wearing pants. He rolled them up a bit. Sure. It's hot as hell.
It's
again.
Hot.
Get a dome in your stadium.
Hotlanta.
Quit complaining.
There's a nickname, Hotlanta.
Exactly. Ridiculous. And by the way, I like seeing the guys a little bit more casual before the game. It's nice. It's
shows
not, you know,
a, shows
yeah.
they're having fun.
Yeah, they're having fun. You know, they're normal dudes, right? Like, that's, you know, they shouldn't be kept, you know, hermetically sealed and always look per. Again, this isn't the goddamn 20s. Anyway, they had the gall to ask Dave Roberts after the game. And I don't know if you could hear the question. The question is pretty low because the reporter is not mic'd, but just the loaded question alone is so obnoxious. Here, check this out.
I think the key to winning the first three games here is letting your players relax in the pregame and maybe stay a little cooler, a little longer.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I heard a little bit about that. You know, I don't. I'm not obviously in tune with the broadcast, but I think that. If anyone looks at our guys, and you mentioned Chase Utley and unprofessional or however you want to, they want to classify it. I didn't hear the video, the audio. I want to hear it, but I take it personal when people question our professionalism because I'll put us, our professionals, in the way we play the game and prepare every day against anybody. So I got to hear the audio.
Get him, Dave.
That kind of sets me off a little
bit. Yeah, shut that guy. Shut up, dude. Just the way it's worded, like, do you think that Lydia, you're gay? Like, come on, man, all right? Just ask him, all right? Quit beating around the bush. Anyway, so stupid. I'm done. I'm over it. It's all good. Anyway, Dodgers won that game, so maybe that's why they're a little bit butthurt right now. So I don't know.
Maybe so.
Oh, my God. Anyway. All right, that's...
Are we still at no hitter
still
through
no
eight?
Hits. Still no hits. So let's keep jinxing it, okay? Let's see, Eduardo. So a lot of trades from American League to National League or vice versa. A lot of interleague trades. Again, we saw Eduardo Escobar, go to Arizona now, which is I was waiting for Arizona to do something because they're really the only team. No offense, that are going to threaten the Dodgers for the West.
No offense taken.
So they didn't really go hard on anybody, and I thought that they should have, especially infield. And then so yesterday we did see that happen. I guess it was early on Friday. Yeah, they got infielder Eduardo Escobar for Yoan Duran and outfielders Ernie De La Trinidad and Gabriel Maciel. It's official. And, you know, Escobar could play all over the infield. And he could settle at third base for the time being while Jake Lamb is headed to the DL with shoulder injury. But that's going to be a huge impact for that team because he can play virtually any position on the infield, which they desperately need. They desperately need a guy like that. He's hitting .274, .338 OBP, slugging .514. For a little guy infielder, that's pretty good. He's got 15 home runs, 63 ribbies already, and a league-leading 37 doubles this season. So
that's fantastic. I've heard so little about him this year.
Well, I mean, I just know he's just a doubles machine. He's kind of like a Jose Ramirez kind of guy, although Ramirez is now just way beyond that. But, yeah, it's going to make the West definitely a lot more interesting there, and it gives them a lot more flexibility and a lot, you know, maybe some speed in their lineup as well. I don't know. See how that goes. Yeah, a lot of trades. Again, there'll probably be some monster trade as soon as we get off the air here. But for now... I think that's mostly it. What else you got?
Well, I got a little bit about the steals. Where have steals?
Well, we talked
this
about
game
this,
game?
Right? Yeah, steals are virtually non-existent
They are virtually non-existent, and I found a stat to sort of exemplify exactly how much they're disappearing. And so it turns out that since 1964, only twice has the Major League Baseball leader in steals finished the year with less than 50 steals. And one time it was 49 steals, and the other time was 48 steals. So
sounds
not
right.
too far off from 50.
Right.
This year's so far Major League leader in steals is Starling Marte.
Starling Marte, really?
Starling
He's
Marte
leading all of baseball
is
in steals.
Leading all of baseball in steals right now, and he is on pace, projected to finish the season with 40 steals.
Wow.
So
Jesus.
So definitely a significant difference off of 50 steals.
And he honestly, if you're on pace for 40, he's probably not even going to hit 40.
It's possible not, and it's possible that he'll finish with more
Jesus.
As well. But right as of right now, if he continues at the same rate, he will finish the year with 40.
That's insane. That's pretty hard to believe, but I mean, I guess it makes sense. Yeah, but again, it's because kind of like we were talking about before, you know, teams just aren't taking chances like that anymore. They're just not. And it's kind of strange. I don't know what the deal is. I guess maybe pitchers have a much better move now. People aren't, you know, throwing out of the stretch as much. A lot of pitchers are just, you know, they pitch as if there's always men on. So, but I don't know. Or maybe guys just, the art of the steal is gone, perhaps?
Art of the steal is gone, or just something about the metrics that show that trying to steal a base is not worth it in the game of on-base percentage and scoring and station-to-station baseball. That extra base, stealing a bag in and out and during an at-bat is passé.
Yeah, you know, it just doesn't seem as worth it maybe now that guys are just hitting home runs all the time. It is pretty crazy. Yeah, you're right. It's Trey Turner does have 24, and so does Michael A. Taylor, and so does D. Gordon as well. But man, yeah, that's pretty crazy. That
it's pretty low at this point in the season based on history.
Like, I know guys like Billy Hamilton are just, you know, pretty garbage. You know, he's only hitting like 220 or something, so he doesn't get on base as much as he used to. But D. Gordon's still hitting 290. You know, and he only has 24. It's surprising.
It is. It is a little bit surprising, which is why I noted it here. So,
and Trey Turner, a guy that for the last couple of years has been going like first round in a lot of fantasy drafts, which I just never understood. You know, but again, I guess his huge upside was steals. But he's batting 267. He only has 24 steals. I mean, he's got 88 strikeouts. It's like. I don't know. This sort of just goes into my whole. I never really understood Trey Turner, and especially since he gets a lot of errors too. I mean, he's already got 10. No, he has 9. All right, he has 9 errors. I guess he's not double digits yet, but still, you know, very pedestrian. And I feel bad for those guys. But hey, what are you gonna do? Yeah, Starling Marte. All right, I hope he gets 40 because that's pretty sad. If nobody in baseball is gonna even get 40 this year, that's weird, man. It's really strange.
It's been a big part of the game for so long.
So does it seem like maybe if you are a team that just start, like maybe like the Rays or a bad team that that can afford to try new things, just start stealing like 5 times a game, like the old Ricky Henderson days, you know?
Well, Ricky Henderson was a force unto himself. But I mean, even going back to the early 80s, Cardinals with Vince Coleman and Ozzie Smith, and those guys ran and ran and ran and ran.
Yeah, again, it was a different game. Pitchers throw a lot harder now. Guys are in better shape. Catchers are certainly, sure. And I'm sure they have metrics on caught stealing and everything like that. Right. And it is an out that you really don't want to make. Making any out on the base paths is tantamount to – it's worse than striking out, really, because you're already there. You already have the chance kind of thing.
Right. I remember back when Barry Bonds – and his heyday of hitting home runs didn't want anyone trying to steal while he was batting because it was distracting for him as a hitter to have the runner running. I don't know what kind of validity is there, but you know it definitely was there.
Especially if there's a guy on second dancing on second and he's right in your batter's eye. You know, that's not very fun either. The pros can handle it. You know, yeah, the guys that are
they
the
should
veterans.
Be able to right. anyway. And speaking of Barry Bonds, the last little bit, and I bring it up only because A, his birthday was on Tuesday, July 24th.
Sure.
And today is Hall of Fame induction day. And just another quick stat to argue why Barry Bonds should be inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So Barry Bonds' record of 762 home runs, if you were to convert those 762 home runs into strikeouts, and Barry Bonds would still have a higher on-base percentage and a lower strikeout percentage than Willie Stargell, Reggie Jackson, Mike Schmidt,
Jesus,
Sammy Sosa, and Alex Rodriguez.
Good God. Well, of course, Reggie Jackson does have the most strikeouts in baseball history, so that makes sense.
Sure.
I guess. But that's still
Willie Stargell
and
Mike Schmidt are not players that you associate with.
Feast
strikeout
or
percentage.
Sure. And so what you're saying is, if you take away all 100% of his home runs, he would
and
still
give, and give him strikeouts in their place, an additional 760 strikeout. Absolutely,
he would still be Hall of Fame worthy. That's insane. Yeah, that is
because he'd
crazy.
Still have those two stats better than those players
right.
who are also Hall of Fame worthy, if not
well,
A-Rod, already.
Yeah, we'll see about A-Rod, but worthy, sure. Yeah,
worthy. Whether he'll make it or not, that is
right.
still up.
Stargell, though, 100%.
Yeah.
Local boy,
Mike Schmidt,
right? Alameda, Willie Stargell. At least there's Willie Stargell Drive or Boulevard in Alameda. It's super cool. So player of the week, that's got to go to Matt Carpenter, right? I mean, where did he come from? That was just pretty, that was insane.
Yeah, quite a good week.
In fact, he did something no other player has ever done at Wrigley, which is he hit 6 home runs in one series.
Wow.
Granted, it was a 5-game series, but not, you know, still, not Ernie Banks, not Andre Dawson, not even Sammy
happen?
Sosa.
How often does it happen to have a 5-game series? I don't remember the last 5-game series that...
It is true. It is.
Was
it
this
is.
Like a weather makeup? Is that why it was
so.
Scheduled after the All-Star break?
It's just a nice interdivision, nice big long series. You know, not unlike the fact that the Giants and the A's played 6 games against each other.
Yeah, but that was
different parks.
That was broken
sure.
up though by the All-Star break.
Right,
so it wasn't like 6 games consecutive.
That's true. But no other active player has ever made 6 home run trots in one series, any year, any park, any series. In fact, there have been only 2 other 6 homer series by anybody in the last 15 years. That's Josh Hamilton, of course, thanks to that his inauguration into the 4 homer club back in 2012. And Hesop Choi.
Hesop Choi.
A little nostalgia trade here.
That was not a name that I was expecting you to say.
I know, that was not the name you were expecting. But I do remember 2005. That was at Dodger Stadium. Oh, yeah, Hesop. Doing his thing. But Carpenter also tied one of the most quirky records ever. He hit a home run, but no singles in 6 games in a row. The only other hitters to do that, speaking of, Reggie Jackson, Barry Bonds. Pretty crazy, right? There you go. And on that 6-game streak, Carpenter rolled up 8 home runs, man, and 3 doubles in just those 6 games. That's... The only other player to hit that many homers and doubles in any 6-game span, Ralph Kiner in 1947. It's a pretty rare era right there.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Absolutely.
I don't know what the hell Carpenter was eating. I don't know what was going on.
I guess the extended All-Star break did him good, huh?
Yeah, I'd say so. And again, fantasy owners are extremely happy. But that's going to do it for us. I got to watch the rest of this game. This is really bumming me out here. We really got to get a hit going. We have 3 more outs.
This is the only circumstance, by the way, that I would possibly even root for the Atlanta Braves.
Well, yeah, we have the game on right now as we speak in the studio today. It is the bottom of the 8th and, it is still a no hitter, but I don't know if Sean Newcomb, I'm sure he's never had a complete game in his short career. And there's a lot of pressure. Of course, nobody's talking to him right now. They're showing him. He's sitting there, calm as a Hindu cow, trying to stay zen. But Okay, Nuki. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question. What is a single game record for RBIs since the start of the expansion era in 1961?
What is the single game RBI record since the expansion era? I see.
Right.
Huh, that's interesting. Okay, now we do have a couple guesses here, so let's see what we got. We got Avery in Oceanside says Garrett Anderson. Ooh.
Garrett Anderson.
That's interesting. You know, Garrett Anderson did have a 10 RBI game, but let me see. When was that? Garrett Anderson, yeah, 2007 with the Angels against the Yankees.
Definitely,
yeah.
definitely a good guess, but that is not the record. Someone did have more RBIs in a single game.
We did talk about Rendon's 10 RBIs last year, and Mark Reynolds had 10 this year. So,
right,
the answer is not 10. Then let's see, we got Brooks Bro 15 in Paso Robles. Reggie Jackson,
third
time on this. Not either, but let me see. Yeah, Reggie Jackson did have 10 as well in 69.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was an A.
Yeah.
So, no.
Not bad guesses.
Those are good guesses. I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking older than that. But you said since the expansion era, right?
So, right, since 1961. Before 1961, it's possible that someone had hit more in a single game.
But so, my guess was Nomar. That's what I was thinking. Nomar. But now that I'm looking at this list here, Nomar did have 10. When he was a Red Sox, but so yeah, no, I don't. I have no idea. I don't know.
Well, that's why we have this little segment to test baseball knowledge across the internets.
Okay, so what's the number?
The number, the single game RBI record is 12.
12.
12 wow. RBIs in Jesus. A single game.
Good lord.
That's. If it's you're talking a 9-inning game, that is an average of what? 3 at bat?
Yes, I mean, depending on your at bats, but yeah. So what is it?
It happened in September 7th of 1993. St. Louis Cardinal Mark Whitten hit 12 in one game.
Mark Whitten. Wow. Mark Whitten hit 12.
Yeah.
Jesus. So yeah, I guess it had to have been somebody that's not overwhelmingly that maybe you wouldn't think of. Okay. Wow. Yeah. All right. So no.
And
winners.
Often it's quite amazing how often that happens. That it is someone that it's not even on the radar who could possibly hit more than 10 RBIs in a single game.
Yeah, and so he was a Cardinal at that time.
He was a Cardinal at that time.
Wow.
I believe it was his third year.
Pretty impressive.
In the league.
And so there was Jim Bottomley, though, in 1924. And that's different. That was he did get 12 as a Cardinal as well. So I don't know what it is about those Redbirds, but that's pre-expansion. That doesn't count.
Right.
All right. Hey. But, you know, nobody even got that. And then just a little add-in. Wilbur Robinson was the first player to drive in at least 10 in one game. And also amassed a record 7 hits in the same game. Pretty impressive. And he actually had 11 in a game. This is 1892, but hey, you know, what are you going to do? All right, what do you got for me this week?
Over a century of baseball, a lot of strange things have happened.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com or leave the answer in a comment section, iTunes or Podomatic website.
Or even Facebook at West Coast Bias Baseball. Podcast.
Yes. Alrighty, what do you got for me this week?
This week I have we have a rookie in our midst, Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Okay.
He became just the second rookie ever to have 10 consecutive multi-hit games in his rookie season.
Last night
in his rookie season,
he got his 10th
consecutive multi-hit game.
Jesus.
10 games in a row with 2 or more hits.
And so you're telling me somebody else is some other rookie in history?
One other rookie in history has had this achievement. And who was that? Who was that rookie?
Wow.
The first rookie to do this.
The first and only other rookie in baseball history to have 10 consecutive multi-hit games.
Yes.
All right, okay. So, well, no, I have an idea. Okay, all right, I'll save it for next week. I'm probably going to be wrong because I'm rarely right. But you never know. All righty. On that note, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And thank you for listening. Just remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.